Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for February 15, 2018, and a few topics to talk about tonight, the strange objects in outer space. This is something that covers a lot of territory dealing with this object called Oumuamua, and it was discovered last year as it was leaving the solar system. It had zipped through the solar system, only to be noticed after it had left. And so they snapped a few pictures, but some very strange interpretations, let's put it that way, coming from standard science. A few other topics dealing with going back to Hale-Bopp and the asteroid belt and other topics like that, so all mixing together with the concept of understanding how objects develop in outer space and how they work in outer space, the physics of materials in outer space. And that's one of the issues that you might say it's poorly understood by a lot of space scientists. For example, how do ices work? The frozen state of, say, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, or water in outer space, because this object called Oumuamua was seen from a distance. They really had no information other than albedo measurements and some coloration. They noticed it was flipping rather erratically, and one side was black and the other side had a red spot on it. Very strange. And somehow they managed to determine that it had ice in the middle of it. And there was, of course, nothing visible. You have an artist's rendition of this object, which, simply an artist drawing a picture of what he imagined a needle-like rock would look like in outer space 1,000 feet long, like an aircraft carrier hurling through space, flipping around and zipping through the solar system. But I'll be talking a bit about that. First, a commentary on the aliens in movies. It seems like more and more, as I go around and see movies, or looks like possibly series coming on TV. Remember, the old normal was to have various, they always had to include people of a certain ethnic or belief systems, or what would you say, just various things, to include them as the new standard. Much of this to break down the family values, the traditional family values of a Christian nation based on Christian fundamental principles. But now the new normal appears to be, and this we'll have to wait and see, but it appears to be that you have to have an alien in your sitcom or other, adventure movie or whatever, as the new normal. And I'm just wondering, of course, we've had Star Wars, we've had there was a show on 20, 30 years ago, it was called My Alien or something like that, where this guy had a buddy who was an alien. And so this theme has been carried throughout time. Just very interesting that this would continue. And so anyway, we'll see how this develops. But as we go into the future, something to keep an eye on, if the new normal will be to have aliens in your programming. Just a quick mention, it's something I have not talked about really much at all on this show. A lot of you are aware of it. I had what I call a paid cast. Now, the paid cast is a hour long. It's an extra, what I call, deep dive into scientific topics that is a paid subscription, $3.95 a month. And I cover various different topics. But right now I'm involved in a series that I call World Energy Water Project. And this is about a 15-part series. It started in January, and with the topics energy, these are each topic is a different week, energy, water, population, food, environment, poverty, which was last week, terrorism and war, which is this week's topic, disease is next week's topic, then in March, education, and March 8th, the topic is democracy, and then the 15th, 22nd, and 29th of March, I do a little mini three-part series under this main head topic of World Energy Water Project of sources of energy. Number one, coal. Number two, nuclear energy. And number three, petroleum, where I concentrate on where these sources of energy come from and where the entire process of procurement, of processing, bringing them to market, then the burning process, the efficiency, the environmental impact, and the issues that go along with high energy content fuels. And so this is a series that I think would be very interesting for everybody. And then after that, starting in April, I will begin with some courses for students. And this could be students of any age. But the idea is to teach physical principles and mathematics together. And it's a way of teaching mathematics that's understandable. So kids and adults, there's a lot of people who really did not get a good math background as they went to school. And here's what typically happened, what I discovered as I was teaching mathematics. And there was a time when I was tutoring kids. And process was because they had missed something in mathematics. And so what I realized that they would have missed sometimes an entire year because of a bad mathematics teacher or somebody that couldn't relate or they fell behind for some reason and just never caught up, because mathematics is like a string of concepts. And if you miss one, then you're probably not going to do well at the next one, and that feeds on into the future. So anyway, the idea is that you have to understand mathematics and then visualize it. So anyway, that'll be coming hopefully in April, some of those topics. But this is to encourage people to sign up for the paid cast. It's $3.95 a month subscription. And also, when you sign up, you get the possibility of buying all of the paid casts going back to August of 2016. And for a very low price, like $25. And then also for a very low price, you can buy my ebook set as a bonus and get all of the foundational material that goes along with my books, CDs, DVDs, etc. But you can get the books, the ebook set, for another, I think it's $25. So just a really super price when you join the paid cast. So I encourage people to do that. And then every month I send out an email, and the email then has all the links appropriate for the subscription that you purchased. That is something I'm trying to promote here, so that people, in fact, join this and start paying attention on a weekly basis to this extra paid cast. And it also helps me out. It's one of the things that I want this to grow. There's quite a few subscription shows out there. My show here is commercial free and always free. So you don't, on my webpage, a tremendous amount of information that's free. But the paid cast is a way, once I get up the good number of subscriptions, it's very helpful to help pay the bills, etc. And so it helps me, it helps you. At any rate, go to my webpage, just scroll down. There's a link with all the topics going all the way back to August 2016 and for the paid cast. So check that out. Now, also, as long as I'm talking about it, I should mention that the water filter sale is still on. the water filter sale, 15% off the water filter products. And they are the JMCC GF filter elements that take all of the bad things out in one filter. I've just on some radio shows, they had some of those other brands advertising over my voice, you know, during the breaks, etc. And what they don't tell you in these spiffy commercials where they claim to be the top number one best whatever is that their filters don't take out even arsenic and fluoride, and you have to buy an extra filter just to take out those. So mine, all of it is taken out in a single filter. You don't have to buy extras, and my filters cost less than their add-on filter, if you can even imagine that. And mine are made in the United States, in our own factory, etc. So go there, and the 10 packs of filter elements are on sale, 15% off, plus free shipping. I don't know how you can go wrong with that. But also the whole house filters. The whole house filters, the MR500 is 7 gallons per minute flow rate, and the MR9 is 12 gallons per minute flow rate. So those are available. And for anybody's house that I know, the MR5 is fully capable of handling your household needs. And then you can stop bathing in that chemical soup of the chemicals that come through the water line. But anyway, with this 30% sale, the MR5, which is normally $3,070, is 30% off, and that's a savings of about $900. Plus, the filter replacement packs are greatly reduced when you buy them with the original purchase. So, a big savings there also. Some people are buying two or three replacement packs with the original purchase just so they have those far into the future. And the replacement packs, the filter pack lasts for 55,000 gallons. So, a tremendous amount of time. For most people, that'd be a couple years. Then the MR9 is 30 with the 30% off. Normally it's $49.95. It's like $1,500 off with that 30% sale. So now is the time to get those if you're looking for a whole house filter. And the way you would install these, you would first, if you have any mineral problems, a water softener would go first, then the MR filter, which also comes with a UV filter as included, and that kills any viruses, any bacteria that may have gotten through the process. But these are the same quality as my standard JMCC GF filters in terms of removing everything, including arsenic and fluoride and glyphosate and chloramines, the whole a very big laundry list of chemicals and chlorine. So you're not washing your clothes with chlorine, you're not showering in chlorine, and medical reports have indicated that that is where the really bad, it's coming through your skin, and you're breathing it. So the breathing is going right into your bloodstream. So that's what doctors have really determined is one of the big potential causes of cancer in the United States is basically showering and breathing in once a day, or, you know, most people shower once a day or once every couple of days, whatever. But you're breathing in this vapor of chlorine, etc., and in your lungs, it goes right into your blood system and right into your cells. So protect you and your family with a whole house filter. Okay, and you don't need any other filters in the entire house. Okay, enough of that. And I mentioned the paid cast, the very important programming that's going on there now. And also just a note, my webpage last November, I updated all the water filter buttons to a different like drop-down menus and upgraded it so it was much, much easier to use. And I had not gotten the book part of that done, the books, CDs, DVDs. And so hopefully by the time this show airs, I will have done that. It just shows how busy I've been with the wing generator, the release. There were times in the last months where I would go 2-3 days only sleeping. I'd sleep in my clothes, get up because so many things were going on. The legal activity that went on behind the scenes was extensive. There's patents, trademarks that were and been ongoing for quite some time, but a lot of work had to be done in that vein. A corporation, an LLC, is formed around all of this, and so many things had to be done so that all the ducks were in order for this release. So just not just building something that works and is going to bring us in the jet age, into the jet age of wind energy, but also all of the background work just was exhausting. So literally for 6 months and intensively the last 3 months, that's all I've been able to concentrate on. Plus, I did have all my interviews to do. I hosted the Joyce Riley, the Power Hour show. I call it Joyce Riley, but it's the Power Hour now. Joyce has passed away, and Daniel has taken over the show. But I've hosted that a couple of times. I've been guest there. I've been guest on John Moore's show. I've been guest on Keith's show from Arizona. Many other shows just to promote the wing generator and get the word out there. So I've been a busy little guy for for an old guy. I keep moving and mentally active. And one thing I have to say is that my health is very good. All this activity sometimes might be stressful, but I'm, let's say this, I haven't gotten much golf in. I'm still looking forward to the day when I'm going to have a lot of golf. So anyway, it's not like being a NASA scientist where I hit that retirement age and I just go by my place in Arizona and golf, have my little telescope in the backyard that I play with. No, I'm busy on all fronts. I've got another book that's coming out that's working on in the background that I had to stop last August when all this activity, I had to leave my remote place where I was working and traveled halfway around the world to do the wing project. So a tremendous amount of activity going on there. But I want to get back to that book and finish it because it's really primo. It's probably the most complicated book I've ever written, and I had to leave it last August, just almost finished. So many things around coming on the horizon there. And by the way, I also put on my webpage, and a couple people have clicked on this, and it's a donation button, because I'm recuperating some of the things. I put a tremendous amount of financial effort also into the wing generator and everything that went with it. So a couple people have donated, and you can donate either by simply clicking that donate button or purchase something from the webpage. Then you get something. The donations are not tax deductible, but they're not tax deductible. But the purchases for a product, and then you get a product, and I take that money and also put it towards the projects that I'm working on. I personally live on, I set myself up a long time ago, so it's something that I should tell you about. I've mentioned this before in radio shows. I talk about what I call free living, and it's a way of setting yourself up so that basically your living is free. You basically don't have any bills. Or, you know, you always have some bills, or you go out to eat, or you do something fun, or, you know, etc. But free living is actually that. You just set yourself up so you don't have any bills. And of course, like I say, there can be the normal little things, but basically that allows me to dedicate myself to my science and my research. And I've always said, too, in my 2003 talk at the UFO Congress in front of 1,200 people, which included quite a few high-level Tier 1 scientists who came to listen to me talk when I released my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, at that. There was a book signing, et cetera, and a release of that book. But the point that I was making there was that you know, the government looks when they do a project or something, they say, how many millions or billions will it take? And they throw money at it. Like, throwing money, wet money against a wall and hoping some sticks is a solution. And what I said there, and I heard murmuring in the back row, I don't know if it was good or bad, where all these scientists were sitting, but they, I said that science takes resources, and that if you take away the NASA overhead, if you take away the government, you know, the corporations and the overhead that goes with any type of money that flows through that system, if you take away that, if you take away the salaries, the high buck salaries and all the benefits that go with the scientists, engineers, and everybody else related to the project, and then you look at the actual project, a very, very small, minute percentage goes towards the project. And if the scientist, as in myself, I run my own projects, I define them, I go do them, I travel, I do what's necessary to get them done, like this wing generator is a perfect example, then you're talking about getting resources. And if you can garner resources in a creative manner, some of them cost money, actual money, and some of them you can garner in other ways by manufacturing them or machining them or doing whatever is necessary. The cost of doing serious research science is super, super inexpensive compared to the government. And of course, it's still expensive, but it's compared to the government way, it's very inexpensive. And that's what allows me to do leading edge science, like the wing generator, like other projects that are going on in the background. And so when I ask people to buy something, the water filters, etc., I take my profits and I put them towards my research. So you know that you're getting an excellent product and I'm getting some help. And some people just click the donate button, which is fine with me also. And I recognize the names when they come in, so thank you very much. Okay, enough of that. But remember that too. Free living, if you're out there, if you're a young person, you're working, just set yourself up and very simply set yourself up, and this is, depends on the person, however you want to do it, but set yourself up with a situation, that's all I'm going to call it, where you can go at any time and live for free, basically, on very little. And that'll allow you to become a much freer person mentally, not strapped to that monthly, you know, set of bills and other things. And, of course, that's going to be there. And I've lived much of my life with a dual life, living in the system, doing, you know, working for the man, doing everything. And I had it a little different because I had to remain incognito at my jobs because some people where I worked knew who I was publicly. And but a lot of people, most people didn't. And certainly nobody in the outside world knew that I worked at these high security telecommunications locations because they would have gone after me because that's what they did when I was at Cornell. They go for the jugular. They go for your salary. They go for whatever they can do to ruin your life. And so anyway, I've battled that my entire life. And now I'm free from that. I'm independent. And it grinds on those people because I'm on radio shows. I have a much bigger audience than all of them put together. Okay, enough of that. So just a quick comment. The sun is heading into a serious depletion era. That's all I can tell you. And a number of weeks ago, I was invited to be on a radio television show in Russia. And this is the second time I was invited to be on a Russian television recently. In October, there was a film crew that came to where I was located and ran a very extensive interview on the topic of what the scientists in Russia are saying that were also interviewed for this. Now, this program was the equivalent of 60 Minutes in the United States. And just a quick aside note, many years ago, a similar thing happened. A film crew from Japan came over to the United States and filmed me for it's the equivalent of their 60 Minutes Sunday night news show. And the producer came, the producer of the show, because he had heard about me and wanted to interview me regarding the topic of Planet X. So I filmed the entire session myself, which they were fine with, and it lasted about 3 hours, and we became wonderful friends during the interview, and then we went out to lunch afterward, the film crew, the staff, the producer, the interpreter, the lady that was the U.S. office producer in the United States of this company. But anyway, they edited that down to about an hour long and showed it on Sunday night Japanese television. And so as it became time to air the show, I asked the producer, I said, what a percentage of the Japanese population will be watching this show? And she said, oh, everybody watches it, kind of, you know, matter-of-factly. And I said, well, yeah, but, you know, there's other shows. I mean, you might have sporting events, or you might have concerts, or other people will be watching everything, you know, other competing shows. And she said, no, in Japan, everybody drops what they're doing. Little kids, grandmas and grandpas, you know, the president, everybody in Japan drops whatever they're doing and they watch this show. So she told me, she said, literally, everybody in Japan watches this show. And so I'm like, oh, everybody in Japan saw me talking about Planet X. And I went through the Harrington issue, the discovery of Planet X, the Hale-Bopp issues, and it was extensive. But anyway, the result of that interview, which is in English, by the way, of course, they translated my voice into Japanese when it was airing there. But the interview here was in English, and the interpreter questioned me from the producer, who only spoke Japanese, and asked me the questions, and it was very interesting, because they were not hampered by NASA. They didn't have the Nancy Leader, crazy lady talks to aliens. They didn't have any of this. This was a fresh topic for them, and I had the open door to just lay it out on the line, spread it thick like peanut butter and jelly on a big sandwich for them to devour. So that was very interesting. And so the DVD that I have in my webpage, it's a hard DVD, has to be sent in the mail, is called What the Japanese Want to Know About Planet X. So anyway, I've been in communication with Russians for a very, very long time, since the mid-90s. I worked with the Alexei Dmitriev and Alexander Tetanov and other scientists at the University of Novosibirsk in Russia. And that was a bit of extensive work in the mid-90s. But at the time, Dmitriev had published a paper, and I talk about this in the appendix of my weather book, in fact, the Principia Meteorologia. In fact, you can look at some of the conversations between me and the Russians in the appendix. But they were very interested in my work because they had already discovered tornadoes on the sun, something NASA had not discovered until into the 2000s. And the Russians knew that these were electromagnetic. They understood more about the Van Allen radiation belts. They used to laugh. They knew NASA never went to the moon because they had tried to send men to the moon, and they came back very dead because of the Van Allen radiation belts. They knew very well that NASA never went to the moon. And they used to laugh about it. They also used to laugh about their salaries. They made the equivalent of $75 a month. They lived in government housing at the university, but they were excellent, excellent scientists. They had studied the explosion at Tunguska. They had been there personally, etc. But anyway, Alexei Dmitriev at that time in the mid-90s had written a paper that stated that the solar system was heading into a rather void region of the galaxy, and of course that the Earth would be cooling down. It would be heading into a cooling period. And also they agreed with my work on the fusion in the surface of the sun. That's the atmospheric fusion of the sun rather than the fusion core model that is standard in the Western society. They did an experiment. It's listed in my weather book, Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, which, by the way, is written for the general public. And they did an experiment which conclusively proved that I was right, that the atmosphere gets hotter as you go up in the atmosphere. It gets hotter and gets cooler as you go down in towards the core, and that the core is cooler, and they actually measured the size of the core with X-rays, X-ray experiment. So anyway, just a little aside note. But they were already looking at a cooling trend for the solar system, and they were very involved in the whole issue of Hale-Bopp, which was depleting the solar capacitor, which is one of the electrical power sources for powering the fusion on the surface of the sun. So anyway, and all of that is published in my papers, 1979, 80, 81, 82, in that time frame. So the return current sheet is where we pass through in the month of August. And that's been rather weak. But after Hale-Bopp depleted the solar capacitor and left the solar system in the early 2000s, we have dipped down to where there are very few sunspots. And the Russian scientists that were also interviewed for this interview on Russian TV, where I was interviewed, and by the way, I have to post those links on my webpage. I will do that. I've been remiss in doing that. I'm going to make a note here. Right now, I'm going to make a note. Russia video links, post my web page. So I'm just making a note. And I'll get the links to that television program that I have access to. And so you can see me being interviewed on Russian TV. This just happened this past October. And the show, I think, aired shortly after, probably early November. And so anyway, a week ago, they asked me to be on an interview again. And so that's coming up in the near future. But the topic, in both cases, has been global cooling. And they are fully convinced that the cooling that we've experienced in the last years is an issue with the sun, that the sun is not putting out as much energy, and is clearly reflected in the sunspot count. But now the issue is we're heading into a solar minimum. And historically, if you go back to the Middle Ages, these are the warning signs that led into the Maunder Minimum, which was actually a 50-year period of cooling of the earth. And there was massive starvation and a loss of crops, failures of agriculture, etc. And then that was one of the episodes in the Middle Ages that's renowned for, and it was, the relationship was with the sunspot count. And we're heading into that once again. Right now, for example, today, or yesterday, I think, on spaceweather.com, which, by the way, is a Rothschild-owned entity, and weather.com, the weather is owned by the Rothschilds. So it's a lot of disinformation. But they got very excited on spaceweather.com that there would possibly be a G-class flare coming off the sun due to what they call a CME, a coronal mass ejection. And back in the Hale-Bopp days, we would have M and X-class flares multiple every day because Hale-Bopp was discharging the solar capacitor. That was an electrical connection directly with the surface of the sun. So the sun's surface fusion was just booming. And so what did that do? It would be like blowing oxygen on a wood fire or a coal fire, where it's just you're really firing it up. And so you burn a lot of fuel during that time. And then if you stop blowing the oxygen on the fire, then all of a sudden it cools down more than normal. And that's what the sun has done effectively, because the energy of the sun, it's internal, it's an electrical fire, the lightning bolts in the sun. And by the way, they've just confirmed that Saturn has these very same conditions, which is what I said in 1979. You can see it in my papers that Jupiter and Saturn have electrical discharges that are causing fusion, low levels of fusion in the atmosphere, and that's why they have excess heat on Saturn being much more than Jupiter. Saturn is a much more active little nuclear engine, fusion engine, than is Jupiter. Jupiter older and a bit cooler, but still very active in the infrared. When you look at Jupiter or Saturn in the infrared, they're just glowing. The great red spot is just on fire, which makes sense because that's a hurricane, and a hurricane is associated with electrical discharges. So anyway, back to the sun. The Russians are convinced that we're heading into a period of global cooling. So anyway, that's what they wanted me on the interview, is to give my opinion. And also, I introduced the wing generator to the Russians. So anyway, that's all very interesting, because the wing generator can be used to produce heat, to heat houses, basically change the wind into heat energy. Those systems are currently, along with the if you look at my video, I mentioned that briefly, but there are places, conversations going on to actually integrate that. And quite a few countries are looking at that as a source of energy. Okay, well, enough of that. But the point is that our sun is quiescing. We're going into a solar minimum, and we could be seeing extended period of cooling because of the sun, not because of global, you know, whatever, whatever. It's a condition on the sun. It's solar conditions. And I've also shown how we have Joule heating from the electrical currents that are involved with Earth. So we actually have a small amount of heating in the heat equation of Earth due to solar, the electrical exchanges that are going on in the solar system, but certainly not enough to create nuclear fusion. There's some yo-yos running around saying that the sun is being ignited by external electrical currents, but it's goofy, because if there were that range of currents, then all the planets would be lighting up like light bulbs too, because we certainly have plenty of fusionable material in our atmosphere, but it's not happening. So that proves that the sun is an internal heat engine, and it's enhanced by the electrical currents that come from outside and the influx of hydrogen. Because as I've said before, there's not enough hydrogen or deuterium in the sun to burn for 4.5 billion years. There simply is not, to provide us with the solar wind and the light energy. If you calculate it out, which I do in my university level astrophysics, astronomy, space science course on my webpage, you'll see that it's true. The idea that the sun's core is providing the heat is ludicrous. I mean, it doesn't add up. You peel away the first layer, onion layer, and it just doesn't add up. Anyway, just to summarize the story, I'll get those postings of me on Russian TV on the webpage, and you can watch those for free. And then there will be an upcoming interview also dealing with this topic of the wing generator used for heating and for the and also the just the discussion, my views on global cooling. And frankly, I do not predict the future, whether it comes to weather or climate or whatever, because due to factors that are beyond our control, beyond which we know we have no idea what's going to happen, there are many factors that could change things rather quickly. But it's very clear, Hale-Bopp did deplete the solar capacitor, the energy source that's instrumental in keeping the electrical currents going that fire these, but like the spark plugs, so to speak, they're in the solar atmosphere, and causing the nuclear fusion in the atmosphere of the sun. So at any rate, we'll see, but just a little discussion on that. I wanted to mention the work of Harrington. Now, this is rather interesting, and the main science topic I want to talk about, strange objects in outer space. And the first one is this Oumuamua object. It was it was like the size of an aircraft carrier, and probably about the shape of an aircraft carrier, tumbling through outer space. with kind of weird gyrations is the only thing they describe, because the only information we have from this are albedo measurements and some color measurements, because they didn't see it as it was passing through the solar system. They only saw it as it was passing out of the solar system and got a pretty sparse data. They did get some good telescopes to look at it, but we see a couple artist conceptions drawing, but somehow they managed to come out with this in published papers and peer-reviewed journals, which tells you right there it's you're going to have to get on your hip boots. But they're claiming that this object had ice in its core, covered by a rocky surface. And I just want to mention how ludicrous that concept is, because if you take ice from the refrigerator, water ice, and you put it on the table, it's going to melt, and if you come back in a couple of days, it'll all be evaporated. But you take that same piece of ice and put it out in outer space at the temperature that it comes out of your refrigerator, which is considered warm in outer space, that ice is going to quickly turn into vapor. It's going to vaporize, sublimate is the term. And so to have an object that would have an icy core covered with rock, first of all, the ice would have to be extremely cold, even to exist in outer space. But then, how do you get this magical layering of a rocky layer on top? And just to be clear, there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever that there's any ice in this at all. They're just making this up out of thin air. There's absolutely no scientific evidence for that preposterous proposal. But if you had a piece of ice, a long, thousand-long piece of ice, kind of like when you were a kid and grandma's house had the icicles along the edge of the roof in the wintertime because there was poor insulation in the roof and all the heating went up, melted the snow on the roof, and it turned into icicles hanging off the railing up there, the edge of the roof. So one of those, you know, all of a sudden flips out into outer space and is all of a sudden magically covered by rock. This is the NASA theory of Oumuamua. But anyway, pretty ridiculous. But how would you get a rock layer which would introduce heat into the system on an icy object that just happened to be floating around outer space? It doesn't make any sense at all. But clearly this object came from some larger object that probably was blown to smithereens by some type of collision, but they certainly don't mention anything like that in the so-called research. But I just wanted to mention, many years ago I was at an American Geophysical Union meeting, and a young physicist, astrophysicist, space scientist from Azerbaijan was attending and explained, I looked at the data, it was very good research, working with documents and data from NASA probes that had taken pictures, close-up pictures of what we call the Apollo planets, or the Apollo asteroids. They're big asteroids, basically some of them almost planetary in scope and in form, but clearly chunks of something bigger. And I'll just mention a guy named Tom Van Flandern, who was Harrington's assistant at the Naval Observatory. And Van Flandern was the guy who got Harrington interested enough to pursue the search for Planet X. And that's when they realized that Neptune and Uranus were being pulled down out of the plane of the planets by some object down far below the solar system. And Harrington took up the search, rather begrudgingly at first, in the mid-80s. And it was Harrington who was interviewed by Sitchin. And Sitchin, remember, started this rumor, totally false, that somehow Planet X had an orbit of 3,600 years. And that got repeated ad nauseum, and it's not true. When Harrington finally did discover, literally discovered Planet X, it was down in that region of the solar system and eventually became the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. And it had a companion. And because it had a companion, they were able to measure its mass and realize that this object was, in fact, the massive object that was pulling down on Uranus and Neptune, possibly four times the mass of Earth. But at any rate, as I explain in my E-DVD, the 20th anniversary of Hale-Bopp discovery, which was the official discovery, was 1995, Harrington actually discovered it in 1989. And that was the cause of the CIA coming in and taking over NASA. Dan Golden from the CIA in the late Bush senior presidential administration, and then taking over NASA in the Bill Clinton administration, Dan Golden shut down NASA. And I watched this because I knew a lot of these people. I had been associates with them, not working for the government, but as an independent scientist, and they all knew me, and they had invited me to talk at Los Alamos, and, you know, we first name basis. When I would call up to Goddard, the secretaries, oh, they recognized my voice. Yeah, James, what can I do for you today? Who do you want to talk to? And so, you know, all of a sudden, all that changed. The secretaries, some of them left. There was just a total different attitude, and that is because of the discovery of Hale-Bopp as an object that was coming into the solar system, and it was on a near direct collision course with Earth at the time. After it exploded into becoming the big comet Hale-Bopp that we know today, the tail drag slowed it down. Earth moved ahead in its orbit a full 3 months, and it missed us. Although Hale-Bopp passed through the solar system, the ecliptic, the plane of the planets, if Earth would have been where it was 3 months previously, it would have, Hale-Bopp would have come within a million miles of Earth, and we would have had basically a big interaction electrically and a big pollution event, possibly a Noah's flood-like situation. But at any rate, Harrington died in 1991 from rapid-onset cancer. His work was scuttled, never heard another word about it. But Van Flandern, interestingly enough, the guy that got him going on this, came out and said, there's no such thing as Planet X. Go away. Don't ever talk about it again. And even in spite of the fact that Van Flandern, and this is my point of this kind of long narration, that Van Flandern had been promoting the idea that there had been a planet between Mars and Jupiter that got lambasted by another planet, well, a la Planet X, or another Planet X object. But anyway, which this disintegrated planet then created the asteroid belt. That was Tom Van Flandern's baby. That was his theory. And so anyway, this physicist from Azerbaijan was talking to me and showing me the data where they were doing a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. They were taking these Apollo asteroids, taking close-up photographs of them, And this is amazing, photographs. And once again, you don't see this anywhere on the NASA website. It was just because I happened to be at the meeting and was talking to these people. But anyway, it would be one thing if you took an asteroid and said, well, that looks like it kind of fits in that region of this other asteroid over here. But they looked at layering, and the layering is indicative that the layering occurred in a much bigger planet, that these layers developed as a planet was forming. And so when it got blown apart, the layers were still there. And so not only did you see that it physically fit like a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle piece, but that the lines, the gradients, the layering, the various colors of the layering fit exactly with the other piece. So it really was a 1-2 punch that this is really what happened, that these were bigger objects that got smashed into many smaller projects, and that's what they were working on. Really, really excellent science. But that was, to me, confirming what Van Flandern was saying, that this object, this planet, got blown to smithereens by a collision with another one, and that, at least in part, is the reason for the asteroid belt. Now, when you look at the asteroid belt, it's not a belt. It's not like a Saturn ring. It's not like a thin region. It's a big donut-shaped region where all these asteroids are flying around in orbit around the sun. Some of them are comets. Some of them exhibit cometary features sometimes. Some of them look like comets and then change back to asteroids. But that's because they're discharging the solar capacitor. But the point is that not all of the objects in the asteroid belt are from such a collision. Some of them are clearly captured. There are objects that were clearly captured by Jupiter or possibly Saturn, who knows, Mars or even Earth in this capture process where you have multiple gravitational bodies performing energy reduction, which allows the capturing of these small objects. Okay. But anyway, the interesting thing about this object that came zipping through the solar system last year is that it clearly formed someplace, some other star system where there was a similar type of event. And when this planet that was between Earth and between Mars and Jupiter got smashed to smithereens, there's probably pieces that went zipping off into space, and who knows, maybe in our own galaxy, maybe in a distant galaxy, you know, a billion light years away, eventually that piece will come to rest on somebody's doorstep. Who knows? Who knows what could happen out there? But objects coming into our solar system, we really don't know where they come from, what their origin. So it's really strange that people would then try and say, oh, there must be ice inside that rocky cover. How absurd, especially after living through a massive, explosive event where it got pulverized. There wouldn't be any ice at all in there because of the heat generated in that that interaction, that basically the planet being jarred apart. But anyway, that's a little bit of interesting history going together there. A listener asked me in an email regarding this object, Oumuamua, asked if that were breaking the solar capacitor, then why didn't it appear as a comet? And that's a good question. I love when people ask questions like this. And the reality is this object was really moving fast. It was moving extremely fast. And even though it may have discharged the solar capacitor, it did not have time to accumulate a tail. In other words, if it attracted any material as it zipped through the solar system, there was no time for that material to accumulate in quantity before the object was simply gone and there was nothing there to be attracted to, because the ions, the dust particles, etc., that make up a comet tail, in the plasma discharge, the tail material is coming in towards the nucleus. So the nucleus has to be moving relatively slowly. A couple weeks ago, I talked about tail disconnection events with comets, in which either the solar wind interaction or something else, maybe possibly the movement of the comet was too quick and it broke the tail. There was a tail disconnection event. And then the tail just goes blowing away in the solar wind. So it doesn't have a chance to come all the way into the comet nucleus. So, but in the case of this battleship or aircraft carrier-sized piece of rock flipping through our solar system, it was really, really moving, much faster than the typical comet nucleus that we see. So that's why there was no tail formed around that object, and understandably so. Changing gears a little bit here, with the wing generator, I've developed a saying, an expression, and sometimes they are expressions like this that cause us to understand better. It's just a catch. It takes your mind, and it's one small phrase that gives you some information. And what I've developed is an expression that this is bringing us into the jet age of wind energy. And remember the old prop planes? Probably most of you are not old enough to remember the old TWA four-engine prop planes that were the airliners, the luxury airliners of the time, post-World War II. And you would travel at maybe an altitude of about 20,000 feet, and there would be a number of people smoking, and they had poor ventilation, and you know, the turbulence was horrible. And all of a sudden, jets came along. And now you could go 30, 35,000 foot cruising altitude above all the weather and the clouds. It went twice as fast as the prop planes, if not faster. You got there in half the time. And it was such a significant event that we actually call it the jet age. We still call this the jet age. You know, you talk about people that are modern and hip and stuff, you'd say they're jet agers or something. But it's a term that really indicates a lot. It's a short term that has a lot of significance, but it really goes back to when we went from prop planes to jet engines on aircraft. And so that's the same with my wing generator. When you see how this works, you'll understand that it's basically the jet age of wind energy generation. And that's why I call it a wing generator, to separate it from the prop. That's because that's what they are. They're prop propeller systems that basically try and catch a little bit of the wind on these three-blade propellers. And let me tell you, I did some analysis here, some big wind installations with those three-blade wind generators, and 97% of the wind on a big windy day, 97% of the wind was blowing through there and not even being touched by those blades. So they just don't work. They're you know, they wouldn't be there if it were for true business practices. But the wing generator brings us into the jet age, and it's very efficient at low wind speeds, medium and high wind speeds. And also it has the ability, which you will see, of a not only electrical generation, but doing work directly, which is a huge innovation, something that the low torque three-blade wind generators could never touch. So I just want to stress that, and this... The jet age of energy, of wind energy and alternative energy, I don't even like to use that term because it's so belabored with this three-blade wind generator and solar panels that I really stay away from those old terms. So that's why I call it the wing generator and the jet age of wind energy. So this will be coming down the line, and if people are interested, if you have a ranch home in the country that uses a lot of electricity, or say a farm which uses a lot of electricity, like dairy farms, I've got an email address at the top of my webpage where you can send in a request and we'll get back to you. So just remember the sale, 15% on the water filters, the water filter replacement elements in 10 packs, free shipping. Remember the MR filters, the MR500 and 900, the whole house filters. And just remember, go to my webpage and see the video at the top regarding the wing generator. The webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.